Gettysburg Seminary presents the Seminary Explores podcast. Conversations on faith, art, people, politics, theology, life, and more. With voices from around the corner and around the globe. Welcome to the Seminary Explores. I'm Katie Giebenhain with Seminary Ridge Review. My guest is Anne Tate, an artist in residence at the Gettysburg National Military Park. Anne is an associate professor of art at Roger Williams University with a focus on printmaking, painting, and visual arts studies. Anne, welcome to the Seminary Explores.
Hi.
So why don't you tell us what a tondi is? A lot of people might not know when they hear that term.
Well, a tondi is a round painting, traditionally. And it started supposedly in at least that in the research I've done, and the word tondi is an Italian word for round painting, a round piece. And so tondo would be the singular, just to get clear.
All right.
And tondos, they think, came from fertility plates that were given to couples when they were married. And they know they were round at least in the late medieval period, probably earlier, but they turned into paintings in the Renaissance. They're well known, and there's some famous ones. I reference one in my discussion that's by Michelangelo. This is probably one of the most famous. It's called the Donitondo, and it's one of the few paintings on panel that have really exists that survives in good form from his early career too. So, but they were given to Italian Renaissance couples when they got married to say, you know, go to it, make some cute babies, and they typically included the Holy Family, and that includes Joseph as well as Mary. Not always, but usually, or at least Michelangelo's does. There's some that are just Mary and Jesus. And they're sort of a good luck gift, but they became kind of a, there's a couple famous ones. There's one in the National Gallery in D.C. that's by Raphael. I think it's in D.C. But anyway, it's by Raphael, and it's a beautiful example of his work in the tondo form. So, yeah, they're beautiful pieces, at least the Renaissance ones. I don't know if they continued. I mean, of course, round paintings continued, but that kind of tradition was really at its peak that I know of in the Renaissance, in the High Renaissance. So,
and how have you? What have you found interesting about this for your work about the
well,
form?
Well, it's just a form. It's just a shape. It's a circle versus a rectangle. And I think when
it's a big distinction, right?
I guess it is. And it's funny because, you know, when you study, I teach history of arts because I teach painting, and you have to kind of do that. And, the perfect forms of the Renaissance are the square and the circle, you know, because they're perfectly symmetrical. They're balanced. They're ordered. They're, you know, they always say the ellipse is the Baroque and the circle is the Renaissance or something. And I think that, in a way, I think I started using them really truly as sort of test pieces for my process when I was in graduate school. And I was working with a lot of Italian glaze, traditional glazes, and actually kind of breaking the rules in ways I wish I hadn't. But and so I was using these round panels. I think I found it at a woodworking store or a hard, you know, whatever. And so I initially started just using them for experiments, and I was doing a lot of work with still life and with Renaissance painting techniques, and so they were sort of my petri dishes. So in some ways, they're a combination for me of being kind of straddling of traditional Renaissance painting and this idea of kind of the formation of self. You know, so my early pieces look very the glazes, the way they're being used, looks very fluid. Even though it's a traditional process, I'm using them in kind of more biomorphic ways. So they look kind of like petri dishes, like humongous petri dishes.
Wow.
So it kind of, in a way, I think it played on that idea of fertility in a kind of back doorway by accident. It was kind of a combination of me working in these processes, researching that period in graduate school, and then finding that I felt freed up not having corners. You know, like the corners were sort of a waste of time. Like, why do I need a corner? And then you think, well, why do we have square things? It's probably table saws. And, you know, it's not a natural form. But it really becomes a kind of form of a painting in the 19th and 20th century when the Industrial Revolution comes about. So, you know, shaped paintings are not as weird as we think. They're just old. fashion. You know, so that, to make a long story short, yeah, that's where it came from, this sort of investigation process and idea. And then liking the form a lot.
Mm-hmm. And what have you been working on in the park here in Gettysburg? Could you describe your project?
Well, I started a project that's sort of a kind of it's a two parallel play project. Mm-hmm. And my background is really as much in preservation, historic preservation. That's what I worked in before I went into fine arts. Okay. And I also have a degree in literature before that. So I kind of took a long, really impractical route to my education and then went back in fine arts. But when I started this project, it's kind of takes a long story short, but the work I'm doing now is related to my interest in how people remembered each mm-hmm. other. And mm-hmm. I think it really started long before I ever went into the fine arts. Whenever I traveled, especially when I was in Europe, I would always go to the cemeteries. Mm-hmm. I think partly because if I couldn't speak the language, I could still get to know the people. And I also had a long history in preservation. One of my jobs was dealing with cemeteries in Massachusetts when I worked there. And I think I always felt that I could find out about the people in a deeper way by sitting in a cemetery and seeing how they remember their dead. And I was particularly interested as I started to realize I was going to be staying in Providence, Rhode Island, for quite a long time, that it was time for me to get to know this one cemetery I've always been interested in. And I ended up later having my studio in it because they had a beautiful keeper's house.
Oh.
So anyway, during that time, I took that as an opportunity to look at the really working class. I was really more interested not in the high-style, fancy stuff. Mm-hmm. As time went on, I became interested in how the common person remembered their dead. Hmm. And then where these images were coming from, these sort of like kind of dismembered hands and dismembered pieces in the 19th century. I was particularly interested in marble headstones in the Victorian period. So that's really where my work's been developing in a way as far as imagery for the last decade almost.
Okay.
What I'm working on here is a combination of things. In a way, I needed to get away from home. That's what's wonderful about a residency and isolating myself a little. But also, I wanted to be in a place that really had to contend with memory in a variety of ways. And I think what's fascinating being here in Gettysburg is how much that moment, those 3 days, have impacted the landscape of this place. It's fascinating. Hmm. So my work here right now is both investigative. I'm looking at the collection at the park, at the National Park Visitor Center, at some of the work that was made in relationship to that period. And I'm working on a series of these round backlit embroidered pieces, but I'm not sure what I'm going to come out with. That's part of the reason I'm here is not, I wanted to think, oh, I'm just going to produce, but typical of me, I need to kind of look through it, and as also it's a chance to think about things and not just do things. So that's my proposal, but I don't know what it's going to take me to. Mm-hmm. I'm very much about how a process is informed by what I'm processing intellectually. So that's part of it. The other side is when I was finding these weird dismembered hands and this imagery that was very modest from the 19th century, I became curious about where they were coming from.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And so I started researching the kind of printed matter of that period. And I realized that it was, you know, really the blossoming of the newspaper and printed industrialization printing. It was also the industrialization of the headstone. So you have this printed matter that's really kind of like clip art coming from what they call specimen books.
Yeah.
And specimen books were books that were provided the type for a company to other printers. So you could buy that type and use it in your broadsides or newspapers or whatever mm-hmm. you're using it for. And I realized a lot of this imagery was coming from that kind of type design, graphic design.
The tombstone imagery was.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. And one carver named Jerry Williams from Vermont, he said, it's sort of like tattoos. Huh. And it is. It's like, oh, you know, I saw that on the side of some, you know, wall, I decided I want to have it tattooed. It's like the depth of thinking wasn't always that profound. But it also was not as common as I thought. Mm-hmm. Most of it was text. Most of it was just words during this period for the common folk. And every once in a while, you'd see a little more personalization through a carving of a flower or broken rose, a hand holding a broken flower, which were all symbols of a death of some sort, early or late, depending on the piece. So
and it is, it's winter now, but I was wondering how much so far have you done sort of outside versus inside? You have a lot of things available to you for your research, and so far have you been looking more at things in the collection, like at the Visitor Center, or have you also been doing some looking at some of the monuments outside?
A little bit of both. Mm-hmm. It's a little chilly. I came in here during a big storm on the 14th, 15th. But, of course, Tom and Greg and Lisa over at the Park Service and the Visitor Center, they've been amazingly helpful at providing me with whatever, whether it's a tour that I was given by a woman named Mary Turkmina, I think. Mm-hmm. And also, I got a tour of the collection from Tom and Greg. It's been... There's so much to look at, especially for someone like me, who's done so much research on headstone work, that it's not a lot of time. I'm only here a little more than 2 weeks.
Right.
So I've been a little torn between how much time do I spend working inside, which is, you know, and just making stuff, and how much do I document what I see or record whatever or respond to it. And so the tour of the collection was really helpful for me. And I also did a walk around both, is it Greenwood Cemetery?
Oh, Evergreen Cemetery.
I'm sorry.
No worries.
Evergreen Cemetery. A little bit of touring around that. Of course, the Saunders design of the original military headstone. And, of course, a tour of all the landscape with all the monuments. And I haven't really decided in that sense what I want to do with it. The other side of my work when I was doing a residency about 10 years ago was I found, you know, because I'm a painter, is I like to study the color that goes on. And I'll tell you, as I walked over here and I thought about, like, why the heck have I been doing this cemetery work for quite a while? And I kind of laughed to myself and I thought, I'm the youngest of three. And my brother and sister used to like to play a game where I was dead. And they'd go, oh, too bad Ian's dead. And then they kind of look through me and act like I was invisible. And in a funny, weird way, I wonder sometimes when I'm sitting in a cemetery if I'm thinking about those people and whether they're remembered. Huh. You know, it's like you're sitting on their body. You know, they didn't believe in cremation back then. Uh-huh. So you had, and you're kind of facing what someone did after they died, probably, to remember them. I think that's why I like the 19th century, is they're not as personalized in a way, and yet they're trying to be. And I think that's why I like the middle class, because they don't have the money or maybe the ability to kind of sometimes do more than just find a quote in one of the Bible quotes that are provided by the industries that are working, or maybe a personal thing. But it's usually a name and a date, and maybe something else that they decided to place on it. So I think it's, I was laughing when I thought about that, being a kid and not being, you know, being dead to my brother. But I think there's a way that's what's interesting to me, is how people are remembered, and if they're remembered, and then how much of that memory is really in that landscape, in that cemetery, or elsewhere. You know, it doesn't have to be the cemetery. So in a way, I think that's kind of the contemplation of it a little bit.
Well, there's almost a bit of anthropology to that, too, because it says a lot, the way we remember people says something about our society and how we live, right, at any given time.
Yeah, it does. And I have a friend who had no idea she would be working in the monument industry. She went to high school with me in Ohio, and she went to college. She's my sophomore roommate. And she is a businesswoman, and her husband loves to solve things. And somehow they've ended up having a monument business in Ohio, in Montrose, Ohio, I think. And she said, Anne, it's so interesting because I have no knowledge of art. I have no interest in it in that sense. But I'm working with clients, including like one of the families that was shot by, you know, like five kids or something, which like terrible things. And she says it's really, you know, emotionally. She says, so what do you want to put on this grave? And a lot of them will just say, well, that looks nice. You know, there's not a lot of thought. And there's a wonderful short story that is that Hawthorne, Nathaniel Hawthorne, writes about that called Marble Chippings, I think it's called. And it's a wonderful story about someone coming in and wanting this elaborate, beautiful, personalized stone. And the carver kind of convinces them to just do a broken rose. And this is 1840, so it's perfect imagery. Uh-huh. And it's such a wonderful story. But it's also the tension because that guy couldn't have done what she was asking for. Okay. But at the same time, it's just a wonderful example of how maybe they come in sometimes with something. Now, today you could sandblast, you know, anything you want on that stone within the requirements of a cemetery. But that's really wasn't the skill level of the average person in early 19th century, say. So, anyway. Yeah, there is a lot of anthropology to graveyards, how they're designed, and it's fascinating. And it really took me down a path of asking myself when I was early in this research, probably around 2006, maybe 2007, is I went into a lot of monument companies I could find in Providence that were from that period, trying to find one old enough that they might have information on where this stuff's coming from. So I found one where he had taken over, it was in Warren, Rhode Island, Warren Monument Company. He'd taken over the company from the old guy, probably in the 50s, 40s, 50s. And it was a classic example of the kind of anthropology of graveyard, gravestones, carvers. The earliest ones were typically English and sometimes Irish later. And then they gradually merged into Italian in the 20th century, maybe late 19th or the 20th century. And so this guy, Don Medici, whose dog's name was Lorenzo, which I think is funny, he ended up showing me this trade book from Vermont Marble Company from 1917. And I ended up going up there. It was an abandoned, really, mill, and finding a lot of the patterns that were being employed. In fact, just about every one of them from that company, which was the biggest in the world. And the president of Vermont Marble was a colonel in the Civil War, and he fought at Gettysburg. Hmm. And it ended up, he basically amassed every single stone company in Vermont that he could get his hands on, that was Vermont, that was marble. And then he bought up 75 quarries in this country between 1870 and, I don't know, 1908 when he died.
My goodness.
And so he became almost a, it was almost a, they would call it a trust, like he was monopolizing this industry. But he took on a lot of these companies, and then I found all the patterns that were absorbed into the design, design component. But he did architectural work. He did the Supreme Court in D.C. He did buildings probably here, in, no question, in Gettysburg. Between probably 1880 and when they fell in 1980. So that took me and I found amazing collection of designs from that period, which is pretty neat. But also it made me see how it went from, like, all these industries, they went from local craftsmen to an industrial, you know, you had a shop that was provided the designs and sometimes the carving from that company in Vermont, Proctor, Vermont.
So, wow.
Yeah, so it did take me down a lot of paths that I didn't mean to go down, but...
Wow.
So
So this might be a bit of an odd question, but thinking about... So a lot of visitors come to Gettysburg. Is there something that you might say to... because you're an art professor, to a visitor who might not otherwise say, oh, I'm going to go to Gettysburg, you sort of view it with a bit of a different lens. And do you have something that you might say to someone about why it would be worthwhile to come, like a young art major who has no interest in the Civil War, that could still maybe be surprised by visiting the park?
Well, I think I've only been here just a week today, and there are a lot of ways to answer that question. I mean, it depends on the person that I'm dealing with, of course.
Of course.
I think about my colleagues, and I do think about the landscape of my students' brains at this mm-hmm. point. Like, mm-hmm. where is the head of these 20-year-old kids that I'm teaching? And, of course, it's all over the place, right?
Sure.
Just like us. They're all different people. But there is, and you probably are seeing it here, but we're seeing it definitely where I am, is there's a lot of interest in the community of Providence and around the country of getting back to making things,
mm-hmm.
to not always being staring at the cell phone, you know, to live in a real, like, world. And mm-hmm. I see this impulse. We have a steel yard that's been set up by Clay Rockefeller in Providence. It's just jewelry making and steel work. I see a renewed interest in hand making of all sorts. And I think in a way, I have one student, Sammy, who's at Roger Williams in Bristol, where I teach, and she just became enamored with embroidery, which I've done since I was 11. And I did some work with her, and I've had a couple students do independent study. And I teach painting. I teach really old-fashioned techniques and mm-hmm. stuff. It's not like you can't combine with the new. You, mm-hmm. you kind of need to sometimes. But I think there's a lot to learn. There's a lot to learn about Gettysburg that I think it's not just those 3 days and the mm-hmm. few years of recovery.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, my background, again, is in preservation. I work in a preservation program. And Jeremy Wells, who teaches with me, just went to Brazil to study the culture, not just the buildings.
Mm-hmm.
It's the people. And I've always been interested in what happens to those people 150 years later. Like, you know, the furniture making was here. There was metalworks. And when I went on the tour, they didn't know a lot about that part because that's not what people typically want. But I'm interested in how a community recovers and becomes and shakes it a little bit,
yeah.
you know, and isn't stuck in those 3 days of history. And again, you know, I think that's where the other cemetery,
mm-hmm.
Evergreen,
mm-hmm.
is to me interesting because what happened before and what happened during, what happened afterward. And so that gives you more of a broader picture that people didn't just all die after July 3rd or
right.
whatever.
Right.
And, or after November or whatever, and when Gettysburg Address. And how to, like, that for me, that's really interesting personally. And I think that what's also interesting is being here is learning about what the community is doing today. It's a really beautiful town.
Mm-hmm.
It's got a really great mix of businesses.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not doing this just as a, you know, to promote your community, but it really is nice. And, you know, you go to a lot of downtowns that are small, that are struggling. So they're doing something right that's beyond just tourism, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe the college helps. I'm mm-hmm. sure that helps. But I think there are a lot of different avenues of benefit to coming here. And I can't judge, but I think that, you know, it's a beautiful landscape. There's still a long tradition of painting and photography in the landscape. I think it's really just awareness mm-hmm. and not looking at it as this, you know, Gettysburg Address / battle.
Right.
And it's like a one-liner, that's
right.
it. So I think
right.
it's a wonderful program that the Park Service and the Gettysburg Foundation has set up because I love being here and I mean, I have a lot of reason to be here because of my own interest, but I'm not as interested in battles.
Mm-hmm.
I'm interested in how people remember people, but I'm not so interested in the big regimental work.
Right.
I'm more interested in the kind of weird personal efforts that people made. And so I see that it has a lot of potential for different artists in different ways.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been doing research. I understand there's a place that has all kind of, you can buy fabrics and lace and all the things from the 19th century because there is that identity. So for people that are, there's a quilting thing at the end of this week. I think that those handmaky things that are coming out of that Gettysburg identity mm-hmm. in the region are probably have an opportunity to be renewed in interest to people that are younger that are becoming interested in this with Etsy and with Craftsy and all these mm-hmm. online things. It's making people more old-fashioned, even though they're using modern technology. So in that sense, I think it's a really interesting time for relearning some of those crafts that have died in the last 30, 40 years.
Almost a bit of a arts and crafts reaction
revival.
To the Industrial Revolution.
That's right.
To our technical everyday.
That's
stuff.
Right. It's very similar to late 19th century, where the printed matter was becoming such a dominant thing, and the novel was accused of being like a TV. It was like the computer or the, you know. And so people are like, you know, use your hands. And then printed matter allowed people to learn how to knit and how to embroider and how to fix things and how, you know. So, yeah, it is. It's the new industrial. It's a digital version of that. Yeah. So it's pretty exciting.
Before I close out, is there anything else that you wanted to add?
Well, I don't know if it's relevant. You know, it's like when I came here, I didn't really think about where it was. But my family's German, Pennsylvania.
Oh, yeah.
Not Dutch, probably Lutheran, I suspect. And they came over in the 1790s, and they anglified their name. It was Wall Lauer. It was Wallover. It turned into, and Fisher and Dawson's and all those people. But I never really thought about it. My mother went to Wilson College and graduated in 1953, I think. And my grandmother graduated from there in 1915, I think.
Oh, my.
So there's a long history of Pennsylvania, and I'm so close. And I didn't really think that way when I proposed this, you know, and I planned it a year ago. But I think what's interesting to me is to look at it personally, like from my, not personally in the sense like I, you know, I was born in Pittsburgh, but I haven't lived in this region my whole life. But to kind of consider it on a personal level, something I hadn't anticipated. You know, that kind of like... I don't know. It's just something I found kind of neat about being here.
It's like a bonus.
Yeah, my dad went to Dickinson. My mom went to Wilson.
Wow.
And I never really thought about those things in connection with Gettysburg because, you know, I didn't live in this area. And and they're just part of my family history and not mine.
Right.
So I don't know. I just thought that was something worth sharing.
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah. Very good. Yeah. You've been listening to The Seminary Explores. I'm Katie Giebenhain with Seminary Ridge Review. My guest has been artist Anne Tate, an artist in residence at the Gettysburg National Military Park. Anne, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you.
You have been listening to The Seminary Explores from historic Seminary Ridge in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, a production of Gettysburg Seminary. We invite you to visit our website at www.ltsg.edu. Opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of Gettysburg Seminary or the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America.